This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Michael Daventry, and coming up on this program, we mark the 20th anniversary of the day America came under attack, with eyewitness accounts and reflections from three Jewish New Yorkers who saw what happened and tried to help. For those of us who are old enough, September the 11th, 2001 has become one of those moments of history when everyone seems to remember precisely where they were when they first heard the news. 20 years have passed since a day that profoundly shocked and changed the world. We continue to feel its effects today. It's changed the way we fly. It's caused several wars. It wasn't the last terror attack on a Western country. But amid all the analysis of how that day changed our world, it's perhaps easy to overlook how the day changed the people of New York City. Later in this episode, we'll have some reflections from a rabbi who is a chaplain for the New York Fire Department. But first, let's hear from two witnesses, both Jewish, both New Yorkers, who remember vividly the events of that day, but from different perspectives. We interviewed them separately, but edited them together to help relay their story of September the 11th. Ari Shombron worked on the 101st floor of World Trade Center 1. That was the North Tower. It was hit by the first plane. You'll hear his voice in a moment, but before him, a yeshiva student and Hatzalah emergency medical response volunteer, Benjamin Diamond.
I was an EMT with Kavra Hatzalah here in New York. I was in Yeshiva University as a sophomore at the time. I had just joined Hatzalah prior to 9/11. The ambulance that was parked by Yeshiva University in Washington Heights was roughly about a 15-minute drive from ground zero with lights and sirens.
So my office was on the 101st floor of Tower 1 of the World Trade Center. Now, to get to the 101st floor, you needed to take an express elevator to 78. The 78th floor was a sky lobby. There were lifts and a lot of open space, and that was it.
I had just finished Shacharis and was having breakfast in my dorm room, preparing to go to Shir, actually. I was sitting in my dorm room listening to that solar radio, and, you know, it was a fairly quiet morning, and out of nowhere, you know, all the radio traffic started.
So I took the first lift that came down. It was all the way on the right side of the lobby. I ran down to the end of the lobby, got into that elevator, took it up to the 78th floor.
So myself and three other Hatzalah members based at Yeshiva University ran to the ambulance that was parked there, and we jumped on board and started heading down the West Side Highway to Ground Zero.
I must have been about 8 feet from that bank of elevators when, as best as I can describe, there was an explosion. I thought a bomb had gone off in the elevator in front of me. The entire building shook, violently shook. The lights went out, the place filled with smoke, and I was literally thrown off my feet. I was on the floor. And I heard people yelling, fire in the elevator, and I thought to myself, of course there's a fire in the elevator. A bomb just went off in there. That was what I thought. I had no idea.
So the first thing we saw was just like, I think you've seen images of a marathon where people are packed together but moving, you know, in that initial wave of like when a marathon's kicking off. So it looked even more dense than that, of people just flowing up the streets of Manhattan from Ground Zero up towards the West Side, trying to escape Ground Zero. And we were navigating that scene, trying to get to locations to help people.
I tried to find a way to get out, wasn't sure. I bumped into a coworker of mine. Her name was Virginia DiChiara. Virginia was on the lift that I was about to get on when that plane hit. And she described the scene to me. She said the walls of the lift collapsed, the ceiling collapsed, there was a cable inside that snapped, was sparking inside the lift, and the jet fuel came down the sides of the lift, and it was ignited by the spark, and there was a wall of fire. There were three people in that elevator. There was Roy Bell, Virginia, and Renee. Roy Bell jumped through that fire first, and he suffered second-degree burns. Virginia jumped through right after him, and she suffered third-degree burns. And Renee, who jumped out at the end, she died.
And one of the first patients that we encountered was actually someone who was struck in the head and knocked unconscious with a shoe that had been blown out of the tower on impact. There were someone who was walking down the street and got hit in the head with a shoe.
We finally found a stairwell that, interestingly enough, went from the 78th floor all the way down to 1. Now, most of the stairwells in the Trade Center only went down like 10, 20, 30 floors, and then you'd have to get out on a floor and walk around, find another stairwell to go down. This one went from 78 down to 1. It was amazing that we found it.
I mean, I'd been involved in EMS now for about 6 or 7 months at the time I joined Hatzalah. I was on a local fire department in our community because we did not have Hatzalah at the time. And I'd seen auto accidents. I had seen, you know, people hit by cars. I had seen some things that I thought were, you know, fairly, you know, serious incidents, even with, you know, multiple patients. But this was something of unfathomable, you know, portions. We couldn't, you know, just the imagery of the building, you know, aflame, you know, like an, it was like the biggest ball of fire that I'd ever seen, the biggest column of smoke.
Now I'm counting the floors down now, 45, 42, 40. You're doing great. You're doing great. And we were doing great until 38. See, 38 was backed up with people because the firefighters had stopped them from going down because they were coming up. So I got really scared because, you know, I don't know how long she's going to last. And I can't afford to be stopped. And so I started yelling out. I said, is there a paramedic in the building? If you're a paramedic, I have a burn victim here. We need help. If not, please step to the right and let us through. And they did. People squeezed over as much as they could. And they literally opened a path so that we can continue going down.
Those people who were involved in the response kind of had to put aside the what are we dealing with, what's going on, and kind of take everything as what literally one step at a time, what patient's next, what needs to be done next, you know, what's involved, because, you know, everyone else was literally in shock, right? We had people, many of the patients we were treating were people who may not have had any physical trauma, but the psychological trauma that they were experiencing was so real that they were completely paralyzed.
So we get out on the first floor. We're heading out. There are cops over there telling us which way to go. And we start going. We finally get out of the building. I find the cop because everybody's running. But at this point in time, cops are going, everybody uptown, uptown. People are running uptown. I stopped the cop and I said, you know, I have a burn victim here. What should I do? He goes, go across the street in front of the Millennium Hotel. We're setting up a triage center there. There'll be ambulances there. Bring her over there.
You know, I was caught under the collapse of the towers. Thankfully, I was about a block and a half away, and we were by an ambulance running a triage center outside of a Walgreens pharmacy, and we felt the ground shake as if, you know, 50 subways were going underneath our feet, and the ground was shaking so violently, and one of the people that we were dealing with started screaming, oh my God, not again, because apparently this intense vibration was like the feeling as the building was being struck by the plane.
I turn around, I look up, and it was the first time that I saw the buildings on fire, and there was a guy standing next to me, and I said to him, how did Building 2 get on fire? And the guy looks at me like I'm crazy. He goes, what are you talking about? You know, I thought it was like a little Piper Cub or a Cessna or something like that, because they were always flying underneath the buildings, right? So I thought it was one of those. Guy says to me, two jetliners went into the buildings, they're calling a terrorist attack. I look at him like he's crazy. What are you talking about?
And I looked up and saw just, I wouldn't say darkness, but blackness descending on Manhattan. You couldn't see past this cloud of debris that was coming down. And it didn't just look like chunks. It just looked like this massive black cloud coming down upon us. And when I described it to the kid, they said, if you read Chazal about the various aspects of what Choshech was like in Mitzrayim, that it was so dark and so thick that you couldn't move. It was like almost, you know, it completely glued you into place. That was the level of the thickness of this cloud that descended.
Virginia was writhing in pain. And I said, Virginia, hold on, hold on. Just, you're going to be okay. They ultimately filled the ambulance, right? The guy said, all right, ready to roll. I breathe a sigh of relief because as soon as that ambulance leaves, there's only one place that I'm going, and that's back into that building because I'm looking for my friends, I'm looking for my coworkers, I'm looking to help. I'm not going anywhere. The guy says, all right, we're ready to roll. Virginia turns to me. She says to me, Ari, you're coming with us. Now, again, I didn't want to go anywhere. I mean, I wanted to stay right where I was. I said to her, Virginia, you don't need me anymore. You know, I'm going to get a hold of your mom. She's going to meet you at the hospital and you're going to be okay. She turns to the ambulance driver. She says, we're not leaving unless he comes with us. I look at him. He looks at me. He's thinking, I see it in his eyes. He's thinking, this is not a cab service. I'm thinking, I don't need a cab. But I turned to the guy. I said, listen, maybe for our own psychological well-being, maybe I should just come. He says, fine, hop into the front. I got into the front of that ambulance and we pulled away.
You know, the ambulance we were in, you know, thank God I looked at the ambulance afterwards, after we were able to safely start moving. And we ended up transporting about 7 people in the back of an ambulance that's really designed for 1 or 2 people at a time, along with 2 or 3, you know, EMTs. And I remember when we got to the hospital and we had brought these patients in, and then we had a moment to finally look at the ambulance that we were in.
We're one of only a few ambulances that actually got away from the scene that day. I have pictures of crushed ambulances at the scene. You know, Virginia thanks me every day for saving her life, and I say, you got it all wrong. If she wouldn't have insisted that I get into that ambulance, I would have been standing at the base of that building when it came down, and I'd be dead. There's no doubt in my mind.
The ambulance saved our lives. If it wasn't for the steel of the ambulance, the windshield was shattered. We were afraid to turn off the engine because we were afraid that it wouldn't start again because of all the dust that the ambulance had been exposed to. And the roof of the ambulance looked like someone had taken a bulldozer and started hitting the top of the ambulance with a heavy hydraulic bucket. And those were the impacts from different pieces of the debris that fell down.
Literally, the entire city changed. There were American flags flying all over the place, all for one, one for all. You know, it didn't matter what you were, what your religion was. Nobody cared, all right? It was, what can I do for you? How can I help you? It was so amazing. The problem is, it lasted about 6 months. I heard somebody on the radio this morning say it lasted 2 weeks. No, I think it lasted about 6 months, and then after 6 months, it just went right back to what it was, and then even worse, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's unfortunate that we lost that. You know, we lost that camaraderie.
I remember very vividly the time that I said Shema and Vidoy because I thought I wasn't gonna leave. I had a voicemail on my old, back in the day, I think it was a Nextel flip phone. And my mother was leaving me a voicemail because she was working in Midtown Manhattan at the time, telling me that she's okay. At the same time that I was saying Shema and Vidoy because I didn't think I would ever see my family again or anyone else again.
The voice of emergency responder Benjamin Diamond concluding that account there. You also heard from Twin Tower worker Ari Schombrun. New York City's firefighters were among the first responders to the Twin Tower attacks. They were at Ground Zero within minutes and entered the skyscrapers to help those trapped inside and above. Many became trapped themselves. Rabbi Joseph Potasnik is well known in New York City and the wider area as the Radio Rabbi. He became famous for his series of one-minute sermons over the air. He's also the chaplain for both New York's fire service and its police. And for much of the last 2 decades since 9/11, he's served as a counsellor to the family members and survivors of the firefighting teams who were killed on that day. He spoke to my colleague Jack Mendel, who began by asking him his foremost memory of that day.
On September the 11th, 2001, when planes crashed into buildings, killing thousands, I was asked by FDNY, the Fire Department of New York, to go there and to bring strength and support to firefighters who are family. I've often said we can be believers of our different faiths, but we belong to one human family. And certainly September 11th was a manifestation of that collective responsibility. When I went there, I saw buildings that had fallen. There was another building that was about to fall. It was the Verizon building. We all ran as soon as we saw the building coming down. I saw bodies being taken out, bodies that were on the ground. It was something that I never thought I would ever witness in my life. So I learned from that experience that death takes away life, but death doesn't take away love. Because of the love of those firefighters for others is beyond comprehension. They wouldn't leave the site. They remained there, putting their own lives in peril. And as you know, not just the 343 firefighters died, but hundreds of others who have suffered with illnesses directly related to September the 11th. So I've often said, we talk about being our brothers and sisters keepers. Firefighters talk about being our brothers and sisters saviors. They are extraordinary human beings, probably the most religious people I've ever met in my life, because who else would run into a building to save people that you know and that you don't know because you feel it's your religious responsibility? Because many of them are people of faith, and they say, this is why I was created. I'm here to save other lives.
20 years on from the 9/11 attacks, are you still in contact with people that you've been counseling and supporting?
Yes, I'm glad you asked that, because 9/11, that tragedy, didn't terminate the relationships over the years. You know, sometimes you're there with people during a difficult time and you may not see them again. But I see many of those people, firstly, every year, because I go to the memorial that is conducted at the site. And there is a place there where all the names are engraved. There is that fountain. I see loved ones who put their hands on the name, rubbing it and kissing their hands, bringing flowers. Yeah, I see many people that I've known over the years. I ran into a family where I bat mitzvahed the young woman, Haley Lehrfeld. She never met her dad. Mom was pregnant. I did her bat mitzvah. I see Wendy Feinberg, whose husband, Alan, was a firefighter from New Jersey, working in New York, who was taken that day. We've continued to maintain a relationship. And, you know, thanks to Facebook, you're able to communicate with people throughout the years. So, yes, the relationship continues.
And what would you say are the problems that victims struggle with the most and their families?
I find that we can accept that a person gets older, contracts a chronic illness, and is taken from us or suffers greatly. This kind of conclusion of life is something that no one could ever envision. And of course, you know, you hear people ask, why? Why did this happen to my loved one? I tell you one particular story. There is a retired firefighter who recently died. His name is John Vigiano Sr. He lost two sons on 9/11. One was a firefighter and one was a policeman. He's a devout Catholic. And I said to him one day, John, you believe in God? He said, Rabbi, God didn't take my sons. Terrorists took my sons. And what he does, and what he did, because he's no longer with us, he would go to Walter Reed Hospital in Washington. He even went to Iraq, and I think to Afghanistan in those years, to say to the soldiers there, we are with you. Be strong. Be courageous. To lose two children and to still maintain the commitment to others, I think reflects a level of courage that we don't readily see in our daily lives.
And just to finish, do you still think about that day vividly, or are you just focusing now on helping people?
It was a young boy who lost his father on 9/11. And I asked him, tell me about your dad. He said, Rabbi, he was never too busy for me. He took me everywhere. He bought me so many toys. I'll make a deal with you. I'll give you back all my toys. Give me back my father. And I think of him, and I remember I said to him, I wish I could give him back to you. But you know what? You can give back to him the love that you continue to have. As the song says, I want to be just like you, Dad. You continue with that spirit, and you'll find also he'll always be with you. I think about that day very often. First of all, I'm with FDNY all these years, so you can't help but think back to what happened. You know, Simon Wiesenthal had an interesting quotation. He said, one day we're going to be reunited with those who were taken from us. And when they ask, what did you do after we left the world? I will say to them, we never forgot you. And I think, using his words, I think that's what we'll say to those who are taken from us. We never forgot. FDNY doesn't forget. Families don't forget. I think anyone who has that conscience thinks back and says, they may not be with us, but they'll always be within us.
Rabbi Potasnik speaking to my colleague Jack Mendel. And that's it from the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, visit www.gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to thank our guests Benjamin Diamond, Ari Schombrun and Rabbi Potasnik, my colleagues Jack Mendel and Justin Cohen for their help producing this episode, Leo Mindell and Adam Bradley for their work in post-production, and you for listening. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast app. That way you'll hear any previous episode and be informed when new episodes become available. Don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we've featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk, and if you'd like to comment, then we'd love to hear from you on editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Michael Daventry, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast, and goodbye.